Time to get on set, walk the runway, and get scouted. ModelScouts.com proudly presents Model Talk Radio with your host, Aaron Marcus. In this program, you'll learn how to get discovered, find work, and navigate the business of modeling and acting. And now, here is your host, Aaron Marcus.
Hi, this is Aaron Marcus, your host on Model Talk Radio, and for the next hour, we'll be talking about the acting and modeling industry. In this forum, we'll give you the opportunity to learn, ask questions, and hopefully stop dreaming and instead begin the process of working as an actor and or model. Now, many people have mentioned to me how they were always interested in acting or modeling for themselves or their children, or were told that they should be in magazine ads or on TV but never pursued it. And perhaps they mistakenly thought that they were too old, not tall enough, they didn't live in a major market, or maybe they had no idea how to go about doing this. And what I found is that quite often, without the right information and guidance, people are simply just too scared to pursue the industry. So by listening to this program, which will run every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you will learn from me and my guests the best way to get started and or get more work in the acting and modeling industry. And with the 26-plus years that I've been working as an actor and a commercial model, I'll share with you in an honest and practical way the best way to enter or advance a career on a part or full-time basis. If you have any questions during the show, feel free to call me. It's toll-free, 1-866-472-5788. That's 866-472-5788, or by email. It's modeltalk@modelscouts.com. If you have any problems reaching me during the show, you can always contact me through my website, howtomodel.com. And I'd like to introduce our guest, John Strawbridge. John, besides being a great guy, he's a director, writer, and author with over 20 years' experience in feature film, network, TV, and theater. He is the creative director of Campanile Media and the artistic director of Actors Company Theater. He has taught classes in the business of acting throughout the region for organizations such as the SAG Conservatory, the Actors, the Smithsonian Associates, Women in Film and Video, ITVA, Stevenson and Towson University, Howard and Baltimore County Community College, UMBC, and Film in the City in New York. He has received 2 Best Director nominations for his stage work in Virginia, and his casting work has been nominated 3 times for Emmys and other industry awards. John is a recipient of the Actors Center 2001 Theater Distinction Award. In John's book, The Audition Book, What Casting Directors Are Really Looking For, now in its second edition, can be purchased on Amazon.com. And I'd like to bring John Strawbridge to Model Talk Radio. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Aaron.
So, I've got to ask you a very interesting question. I know that when you were in college, you were actually studying physics. And I know at some point you kind of made the transition to film and video, and then all of a sudden you find yourself acting, directing, and casting. How in the world did you make that transition?
I did, and it's kind of unusual for someone to come from the sort of sciences and mathematics background as I had in high school. But I went into college with sort of an interest in both, but figured I would stay in that left brain track. But I had taken just a couple of classes in film history and in basic film, and I began to realize that if I really wanted to have a voice, if I really wanted to be able to stand out as an individual, then I stood a much better chance of kind of making a mark in film and video, whereas the sciences were, you're going to become part of a small unit in a division of a larger machine. So I just became fascinated with the world of film and video and what you could create with that.
And so after taking, physics, film, and video classes, I know you told me you studied art history as well.
Right.
How did you go from that transition to all of a sudden, working as a casting director and directing? And
it started in college, and I got to say that the background that I had in physics, in art history, in ancient history, in political science, all of those kinds of things have really come into play, especially in terms of my directing, but in terms even in reading scripts and in working with actors and dealing with characters, having a background well outside of just the arts has been one of the best things I could have done for myself, of having that broad-based kind of background. But
okay.
You know, I was just to actually answer your question, I started in casting because there was a notice on the college bulletin board for an intern for a Tom Selleck film that was shooting in the area. And I sort of looked around and was like, well, isn't this what we're supposed to be doing? So I called the number and started as an intern and worked for free. And I did that film, and I did another film after that one. And I just kept coming in until eventually the casting office figured, geez, I guess this guy works here now.
So yeah, even as an intern, what kind of things were you allowed to do?
You know, we were, at the risk of saying, you know, back in those days, it was kind of a pioneer time. But for the market I was working in, which is Baltimore, D.C., we were really discovering how to be a major market at that time. So I was, you know, so even as an intern, I was pulling talent headshots, setting up auditions, and reading scripts and breaking them down. And so I got to start right from the beginning as we all kind of learned, okay, how do we do this? How do we play the game like New York and L.A.?
Well, you know, and it's really interesting because you're bringing up some things that I think most people really don't have a clue about. And I was hoping that maybe you could walk us through some of the actual steps of what takes place. You know, as a casting director, you get hired by, let's say this is whether it's film or TV, by, you know, a production company, by the producers. And what exactly do you do? I mean, what is the preparation that takes place once you are hired to cast a project?
Sure. You know, it's one of those things that can be real different for a casting director working in New York or L.A. versus the kind of work that I've mostly been doing, which is the rest of the world, certainly the rest of the country. Where most of us live and work. And for us, we're not doing the stars, we're not doing the deals with you know, the 60-page contracts with legal affairs and lawyers. For me, the process begins when the producer, they'll call us, they'll send us a script, and the actual day-to-day process is I take that script and I break it down page by page, character by character, and I note every scene that every character's in, the description, the hard description of the character, what I call the hard description, if we're given an absolute age or race or gender or type or physical description, and then maybe some things that are implied, and then just some sort of character types, just by, you know, as an actor would do, breaking down the character, you know, how does he behave, what type of personality is he. So this whole breakdown becomes my kind of roadmap for where I have to go in the weeks to come of the actual casting process beyond that.
And excuse me one second, just so I understand this. Do you actually, you've got a notebook, or you're, you know, doing this on a computer where you will, you know, have a page for, you know, this particular character and then have a ton of notes, and then there's another character and you actually
I like to work on a computer because I'm just about in that generation, and my handwriting is bad enough. Some people like to do it on legal pads. And if we were working in the major markets, as they call them, which is basically New York and L.A., we would then send that, we would publish that breakdown to agents and to managers, and then those agents and managers would send us the talent they think, their clients they think that fill that bill. For us, outside of those markets, it's up to us then to go through our own files and to find our own resources to find actors, and call in sort of one at a time actors that we think are gonna best fit those things. But yeah, it's a physical paperwork kind of thing. As I always say, the casting process, and there's a difference between casting and auditioning. And auditioning is what you do for a little bit of the time with actors in a room. The casting is what we do that involves that script breakdown. It involves working with the acting unions. It involves breaking down the budget. It involves working out the schedules and the conflicts with the assistant directors and with the costumers and all the things that have go into putting together a cast outside of the audition process.
So when you're talking about, and actually I was going to ask you a little bit about this later, but you brought it up now. When you were talking about working out the budget, what exactly would the casting director have to do with working out a budget?
You know, depending on how the producers work, we're given a certain amount of money, like any other department, like wardrobe or props. We got a certain amount of money to make this happen. And certain actors, particularly certain name actors, are going to cost more than others. And there have been times, and I remember particularly working with Ridley Scott on G.I. Jane some years ago, sitting in a hotel in D.C., and he really wanted a particular well-known actor for one role, and the producer said, well, we can't afford that. He's like, well, what if we cut this role, this role, this role? And the producer said, okay, yeah, we can do that. We'll give those lines to somebody else. And so instantly three characters went away, and a bunch of actors suddenly wondered why they never got a callback. But those are the decisions that, I mean, we as the casting directors don't get exclusively to make those kinds of decisions, but you have to participate in it with the directors and the producers to say, okay, if we spend more here, this is where we got to save it, and vice versa.
So then basically you have a very good idea as to how much each actor is being paid for each role.
Yeah, or how much, yeah, I mean, how much they can be paid or how much they are being paid. Because again, that business side of it, and this is why I said at the beginning it was good for me to have this kind of broad background, is that I do, yeah, I've got to go in and negotiate either directly with the actor or with the agent and come to an agreement about what we can reasonably afford.
I tell you, that's hard to take, you know, as an actor to find out that, you know, somebody lost out on a potential role because one person needed to get paid a lot more, so they just wiped the role out.
Yeah, and it can be even, it's fairly rare, but I've worked with cases where a local actor had a New York agent, which, you know, seems like a desirable thing to do, but I've known that agent to want to preserve his or her reputation for being a hard negotiator, because that agent is representing some of our star cast. And so they're willing to tell me that, no, your local person can't have the job because we're not going to come down on the salary. But more about that agent protecting their ability to negotiate than really what the actor wants. I'm not sure all the time if the actor isn't paying attention, then that can happen. So the actor really has to pay attention to what his agent is doing on his behalf.
Well, I can tell you that with my experiences, I always ask my agent, please, if somebody's offering me a job, give me the opportunity to say yes or no. Don't make that decision for me based on finances, because there are many factors involved as to whether I would, you know, take a job for a smaller amount, you know, or not accept it. Hey, but John, we're going to have to take a 2-minute break here. We are talking with John Strawbridge on Model Talk Radio, and we will be back in 2 minutes.
Have you dreamed of becoming a top fashion or commercial model but don't know where to start? Or are you already a model looking to expand your representation to international markets? If so, then you need to check out ModelScouts.com. ModelScouts.com is the number one choice for aspiring models who want to get scouted by top modeling agencies and clients around the world. Our scouts have discovered and signed hundreds of new models, including supermodel Coco Rocha and Cycle 5 winner of America's Next Top Model, Nicole Linkletter, with the world's top modeling agencies. Our models have appeared in Vogue, Glamour, Marie Claire, and Cosmopolitan, and have worked for Chanel, Gucci, Prada, Abercrombie & Fitch, and more. If you've dreamed about becoming a model, look no further than ModelScouts.com. We want to meet you. No experience is required, and all ages, heights, and sizes are welcome. Visit ModelScouts.com and get scouted today. You are tuned in to Model Talk Radio with Aaron Marcus, presented by ModelScouts.com. Do you have a question that we can answer for you? Call us toll-free in North America at 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to modeltalk@modelscouts.com, and we can answer your question that way. Now, back to Model Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Aaron Marcus, and welcome back to Model Talk Radio. If you have any questions, you can call in 866-472-5788, or you can email your questions to modeltalk@modelscouts.com. And we're talking with John Strawbridge. We're talking about the audition process and the casting process. So where we left things off was this. I wanted to ask you, so you're getting ready to cast and bring people into audition. How do you do the selection process? What actually takes place?
It sort of happens in layers. I mean, first you've got to figure that as a casting director, we're looking to hire a cast, not a bunch of individual actors. So we've got to look for first of all, pull people that all seem to belong in the same movie, that have the same kind of feel. You know, if I'm doing a broad kind of comedy, I might not pull in the same actress that I'm doing for a more subtle period drama or something, even though both sets of people might be very talented actors. Beyond that, it's a question of from my breakdown, if I've got a pretty specific character sense of who that character is, and particularly what they have to convey to the audience. And that's one of the things that I'm constantly trying to teach to my students and to actors in general, is that it's all about making a statement to the audience, making a communication to the audience so that they get what the character is and what that character does in the story and how they advance the story or develop the character. So I have to have that real clear picture. So I'm going to pull in the people as I go through the headshots that whose headshot speaks to that idea, whose headshot says, yes, I can be that conniving lawyer or that doctor who's got a big secret or that really bubbly best friend.
Now, excuse me, I have to jump in for 1 second. So when you're doing this, in your mind, are you thinking, who do I think, you know, as the casting director, who do I think would be right for that part? Or are you thinking, who do I think the producer or the director is going to like the most?
It's probably a little both. Certainly, it's got, you know, that's where we get, as casting people, get to put our stamp on it. But we work for the director, and as much as possible, we need to fit what the director's style is. And sometimes it takes a little while to figure that out. When we did the local casting for Wedding Crashers, I hadn't had a chance to meet with the director or to speak with him. So I bring in some people that are broadly comic. I bring in some people that are subtly comic, and I bring in some people that are not at all comic to let the stars kind of be the comedians. And then as I begin to get the lists, the callback lists from the director, I figure out, okay, what is he responding to? What is he liking? And then I can kind of focus what I'm doing on the kinds of people that the director's liking.
So in some ways, it's almost like you bring your car into the mechanic because you got a problem, and the mechanic is, you know, kind of testing some things out and kind of seeing what seems to help the engine run the best. But ultimately, sometimes it takes a while to really figure out exactly what's going on. And so I guess it takes a little while for you to really connect with the director in that sense.
It can be, absolutely. And a lot of times I've heard actors complain about, I don't think casting directors do know what they're looking for. And they do, but it's oftentimes the directors don't necessarily know what they're looking for, or it just takes a while to kind of put together that the puzzle. It's like a recipe. Like I said, there's certain roles have to stand out. Certain roles have to kind of hang back so that the whole picture works together.
And so for the actors, because, look, you know, when I'm hanging around actors, everybody's complaining. Not everybody. A lot of people are complaining, this casting director never brings me in. What would you recommend an actor do? They're not getting called in to read for things. What would help them come in to get a chance to read for you besides bribes and chocolate or candy or cars? Or
we like that stuff. It doesn't work anyway because we more like getting the next job. And if the director doesn't like the people we're bringing in, we're not getting that next job.
Scratch bribe off the list then.
Well, try it. No. What works is look at the kind of people that if it's a particular casting director, who is that casting director calling in? Does that person like people with a lot of theater background? Does it like people with a lot of commercial experience? Does it like people with a particular look? And then you can try to get that experience. If it's more theater, if it's more experience on your resume that you need, or maybe it just is that you need to completely or to somewhat reinvent yourself. One of the problems that I see when I talked about headshots a moment ago is too many actors' headshots, for instance, the actor has in mind that they want to be anything and be able to be seen in any kind of role. And so as a consequence, their headshot is very neutral. And when I'm going through that stack of headshots and I've got this picture in my mind of what this conniving lawyer looks like, and if that headshot doesn't speak to that, it may be a very capable actor, but the headshot's not being pulled out of the stack. So you might have to make a hard decision as an actor to say, okay, I'm going to commit to going after these kinds of roles, but only these kinds of roles. And I'm going to get a headshot that's very strong in saying these are the kinds of roles I get and have the courage to say I'm not going to get these other kinds of roles because they're not as likely for me. And that's a hard decision. That's a hard thing for actors to do, to really commit to narrowing their marketing, as it were.
So in some ways, it sounds like being pigeonholed into a certain look and type can be extremely helpful to actors.
More than helpful. It's actually how the business works. We as casting directors basically have a problem, and the problem is, how do I fill this role? And so we need people that fill the role, that solve that problem. We don't really need jacks of all trades. We need solutions to particular problems. And the actors that are going to work are the actors that are a particular solution to a particular problem.
You know, that sounds so right to me as well, because it seems like, you know, the stars, you know, they do have the ability to play against type, simply because producers know that people will go to see them regardless of whether they can actually pull it off or not.
Right.
But for, you know, for other people, you know, you've got to fit a very certain type, and that's what, you know, you get cast and hired to do. And there are people who've made incredible livings by basically, you know, playing a pretty similar role in many of their projects.
Right. Yeah. It's like any product. And I mean, I know no actor is flattered to being talked about, but as a product. But when we're talking about the acting business and the film business and the television business, we're all commodities to that degree. And your product has to have a brand identity, and it has to have a market, and it has to have a purpose. And that's what you need to create for yourself. You have to have something that you offer in particular that when I look at your headshot and resume, I say, okay, this is what this person does. And when I need that, this is the person I'm going to for that. And if it doesn't say that, then there's just not much chance we're going to be calling
it. Now, I'm curious. So the audition is done. You might be sitting around with the director, maybe producers, writers. What kinds of things are discussed at that point?
It can be a variety of things, from how well someone simply how effective someone thought their reading was. And there can be more debate about that than you might guess. That a writer, producer, and a director might have really divergent ideas about whether somebody simply gave a strong performance. And oftentimes I hear directors say, "No, she was too on the nose," and I'm sure that would drive the actor crazy. It's like, that's what I was trying to be right on the nose. But a lot of directors think, "No, that's too obvious. I don't want to go that way." And I've also had directors, and very rightly, I'll add, say things like, "You know, she was great, but I have too many blondes in the cast, and I need the audience to know the difference. I need them to know who the characters are on site, so I need to cast a brunette." And again, that's not particularly flattering for your ability as an actor, but it's the reality that the director has to serve the audience, and the audience has to be able to identify the characters.
But I guess my question to that would be, well, if the director really liked this person but had the wrong hair color... Gosh, it doesn't seem like it would be that tremendous of a stretch to go out and spend, you know, $50-$60 and change your hair.
Well, and it wouldn't be, and it's not like we've never requested that, but that would assume that no brunettes in the market also did a decent job with the role. And usually that's not the case. Usually there is someone who is a brunette who has done just as good a job with the audition. You know, and that's, again, it's sort of hard to take, because at least for your ego to think good enough was good enough. But when you're not talking about the leads, when you're talking about the whole picture, it is that thing. It's more, okay, we've got 3 days to cast this. Here's someone who's good enough for that role. She physically fits the bill. Let's hire her. Let's not go change somebody else.
Got it. Well, you know, I remember it was a couple of years ago, you asked me to come in and be a reader on a project that you were directing. Mm-hmm. And I found one of the things that I found so fascinating about it was there were some people who came in to read, and immediately I knew that person seems perfect for this particular role. And I mean, ultimately, I have no idea if they got it. And there were other people immediately, no way. You know, the person just was just way off base and just didn't seem right for the character. Do you generally get that kind of feeling, you know, after, you know, 30 seconds when somebody comes in to read as to whether – I'm not saying they're going to get it, but, you know, just this, like, an initial spark of, yeah, that person's perfect for this.
You do. And it's frustrating. Very often actors will ask me after the fact, well, how did I do, or can you give me any notes on the audition? And if you look at the director's notes, usually it's always yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Because the director has the luxury of making sort of black and white decisions, whereas when I'm trying to teach about acting or trying to teach about the audition process, we have to go into a lot more detail than that. But yeah, you know right away if someone, at least if someone is interesting enough that you want to give them some direction. And maybe they didn't actually perform the role exactly as you heard it in your head, but maybe they did something interesting enough that you want to give them some direction. But if there was nothing there, if it was just a reading, or if they were clearly just trying to do their own thing regardless of what the role called for, then yeah, that's just as clearly, no, let's move on, let's get the next person.
Got it. And so ultimately, who makes the final decision as to who's getting cast?
That varies a lot depending upon whether it's a commercial or a film project or a television project. It's seldom the casting director, although we get to have input and express our opinions. But in a feature film, you know, the typical Hollywood movie, it's almost always the director's call. And the producer will usually only override that if it's a budget issue. In TV, the directors are basically guests. They come in for one or two episodes and rotate throughout the season. So the producers are the ones that are there every week. So the producers generally have, if there is a final call, if there's any dissent between the producers and the directors, usually the producer will prevail. In the world of commercials and industrial production, it gets a bit more complicated because then you have a director and you've got the representative for the product, you've got the representative for the advertising agency, and you've got any number of people who may get into this decision, and very often you end up with what I call the lowest common denominator casting, where we end up hiring the person who nobody didn't dislike.
That's funny. Hey, John, we got to take a 2-minute break here. We're talking with John Strawbridge on Model Talk Radio, and we will be back in 2 minutes.
Have you dreamed of becoming a top fashion or commercial model but don't know where to start? Or are you already a model looking to expand your representation to international markets? If so, then you need to check out ModelScouts.com. ModelScouts.com is the number one choice for aspiring models who want to get scouted by top modeling agencies and clients around the world. Our scouts have discovered and signed hundreds of new models, including supermodel Coco Rocha and Cycle 5 winner of America's Next Top Model, Nicole Linkletter, with the world's top modeling agencies. Our models have appeared in Vogue, Glamour, Marie Claire, and Cosmopolitan, and have worked for Chanel, Gucci, Prada, Abercrombie & Fitch, and more. If you've dreamed about becoming a model, look no further than ModelScouts.com. We want to meet you. No experience is required, and all ages, heights, and sizes are welcome. Visit ModelScouts.com and get scouted today.
Hi, this is Aaron Marcus. Welcome back to Model Talk Radio. We're talking with John Strawbridge. And if you have any questions, you can call 866-472-5788, or you can email your questions to modeltalk@modelscouts.com. Hey, John, so I wanted to ask, a lot of people have asked me about this. They're non-union, they're not a member of SAG or AFTRA, and they wanted to know about, can they actually get cast on a union project?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can. As I always tell people, it's hard to get into the union, but no one is born with a SAG card. So they're because the way you qualify to get into the Screen Actors Guild, for instance, the union representing film and TV actors, is to get cast in a feature film or TV show. Now, that seems like a catch-22 because most people say, well, yeah, but you have to be in SAG to get an audition for the film or TV show. But you have to, it's like I talked about before about filling a need. You have to fill a need, a particular role that a casting director can't find in an existing union member. It's somebody that's either not available, that just doesn't have this look or doesn't have the experience. And if that is the case, then there's a process called a Taft-Hartley, where we as casting directors can hire you, and we fill out a Taft-Hartley report explaining to the union why we were hiring you over a union member. The union can accept or reject that, or they can actually issue a fine, but they can't, in the United States, you can't actually deny someone work because of whether or not they are or not a union member. So the union can't actually prevent a producer or director from hiring a non-union person, but they can certainly make it more favorable to hire an existing union member.
And so I'm wondering, so let's say, you know, I don't know how many projects you've worked on. I'm sure it's just, you know, it's too many to count. But, you know, are there any common mistakes that you see actors do at the audition itself that, you know, that you find really prevents them or makes it very difficult for them to land the role that, you know, you can share with people? So maybe, you know, that's one.